northeastern Ohio, where winter lasts approximately 9 months. June is spring, July is summer, August is fall. All the other months have at least the possibility of snow. There have been times in my life when I liked winter. Now is not necessarily one of them. Winter as a child was great. Sled riding down the hills beside my Aunt Barb's house. Icicles as big as broomsticks growing off my grandmother's house. And lying in bed listening to the radio at 5 a.m. for the powers that be to call a snow day, which unfortunately were few and far between, because Northeast Ohio knows how to do snow. Yeah, I definitely liked winter as a child. But then I learned to drive, and my attitude changed. Clean off the car, shovel the driveway, plow the road, pump the brakes, black ice, turn with the skid. It sounds like a list of fancy cocktails. Or maybe yoga poses. But driving in winter is neither as fun as happy hour nor as satisfying as getting in shape. Later on, when I became a parent, I liked winter again. Sled riding and snow candy, hot chocolate and icicles. The children's joy was my joy. Their snow day was my snow day. We could wear our jammies until noon. Sit on the couch, read books, watch cartoons. No lunches to pack, no backpacks to organize, no buses to catch. Dinner could be pancakes, and that only made things better. A few years ago, we installed a gas fireplace in the living room of our house, and it became a magnet for everyone during the cold winter days. Arguments were put on hold and grudges were forgotten when it came time to sit and warm up by the fire. The cats sat next to the dogs. The teenagers sat next to the parents. The parents sat next to each other. We ate dinner by the fire, watched TV by the fire, and sometimes just talked. But we didn't talk and simply sat and stared at the flames. And for me, that is one of the times when I can make magic happen. I can stare at those flames and let my imagination run wild and feel inspired. I can take advantage of the luxury of time to think and dream and plan. I can leave my cell phone on the charger, turn off the TV, and look beyond the clutter of day-to-day life. Something more than my next trip to the grocery store. Think about the big stuff. Where am I going? What do I want? Who do I want to be? 5-year plans, 10-year plans. Think about the extraordinary possibilities in this world. German author and Nobel Prize winner Hermann Hesse wrote, "Gaze into the fire, into the clouds, and as soon as the inner voices begin to speak, surrender to them. Don't ask whether it's permitted or would please your teachers or father or some god. You will ruin yourself if you do that." When I sit and stare into a flame and allow my mind to wander, my imagination spills out of the box from on the shelf in my brain, where I keep it. Sometimes my imagination zooms around like one of those mini cars at the 4th of July parade, the ideas coming fast and furious. Or imagination can be the bubbles in a glass of milk and I am the child with the straw. Sometimes it's invisible snow that has been falling all around, and slowly I look up to notice the flakes and see the drifts of ideas that have been building up beside me. These are not aha moments. I'm not leaping to my feet and crying, Eureka. I'm describing time spent looking at the big picture and taking stock of what's going on and where we can go from here. While staring at the fire, I've chosen paint colors and planned vacations. I fussed over a 10-year plan for home renovation and crafted survival plans for the 10 weeks of summer vacation. I've thought through a year's recipe for soup Sundays. And I've been inspired to take on a leadership role at church. Most recently, I sat by the fire and wrote this sermon. Mrs. Carrie Baker, the founder of our church, was inspired to do more than just write a sermon. When she and her family moved here back in 1942, she was dismayed by the lack of a Unitarian church in Charlottesville and began a slow, determined campaign to organize one. Mrs. Baker connected with the Richmond Unitarian minister, Mr. John McKinnon, and the Bakers soon attended a Sunday service in Richmond and joined the McKinnons for lunch afterwards. In a narrative, Mrs. Baker writes, "It really did seem hopeless, as the only names Mr. McKinnon could give me were three, which he had in his files from some time past. He told us a Miss Mary Grasty, who lived in Charlottesville, was interested. I, at once, got in touch with Miss Grasty, who was very interested, but knew of no one else whom we could interest in joining. I called one of the other persons, but it seemed they had moved out of the city. I also called another person who had formerly been very active in Unitarian work. And this person said, I was wasting my time trying to get this sort of thing started, but on I went." Mrs. Baker continues, "Mr. McKinnon suggested I call Mr. Findlay at the university, as he has the reputation of having liberal views. And if he was not a Unitarian, he may be able to tell me of someone, of some who were, or may know of some students at the university who would be interested." This lead took me nowhere. Mr. Findlay was very lovely, but could not give me the information I requested. Then I called up the other person whose name Mr. McKinnon had given me. This lovely lady said she was not interested at the time, but if I knew Dr. House at the university, I should call him, as perhaps he may be able to give me some information. In the meantime, I spoke to Marie Wilkinson, telling her of my ambitions, and having lived here for such a short time, I asked if she thought I may offend the natives by trying to start this. She very kindly said, by all means, no. And if I wished to put an ad in the paper, the Daily Progress, she went to introduce me over the phone to Mr. Lindsay, the publisher. And the rest is history. Carrie Baker placed her ad in the Progress not once but twice, October 27 and 28, 1942, and on November 8, the first meeting of the self-titled discussion group took place in the office of Dr. Floyd House of the Sociology Department at UVA. There were four people in attendance. On November 29, their number grew to nine people. On January 10th, it was 14 people, and by February 21st, they were a congregation of 26, and the sermon was titled, "What is Unitarianism?" Finally, on February 28th, 1943, a business meeting was held at Dr. House's office to organize into a society and to apply for affiliation with the American Unitarian Society. Two men and five women, including Mrs. Baker, were present, and the Jefferson Unitarian Society of Charlottesville, Virginia, was born. inspiration, imagination, determination. Thousands of people have come to our church over the years. What else have we done? In 1950, the church building committee, headed by Colonel Sid Poole, broke ground for this building, and in April 1951, services moved here from the University Chapel. In 1956, pews were installed. I guess we were standing around until then. Pews were finally installed, and our minister, Henry Cheatham, presides over the church as the kitchen, the parlor, and the church offices are completed. In 1960, we have 200 members, and the mortgage is paid off. In 1967, Molly Mickey, Ann Spurgeon, and Gwyneth Mooney opened Preschool Co-op in the Basement, which is later renamed Molly Mickey Preschool. In 1974, Norma Belimirovic?
Belmirovic.
Belmirovic, fine. Was hired as our first professional RE director. And in 1993, we bought Summit House next door. Inspiration, imagination, determination. But we don't live in the past. What are we doing now? Beth Yeager Landis had lunch in another UU church and came back to TJMC to start Super Sunday. Griff Griffiths was inspired by our former minister, David Morris, to join the men's group, Youth Guys, and now Griff does outreach and promotion for the group. Bayer patrons started a themed study group inspired by materials developed by our Director of Faith Development, Leah Derwin-Jones. Kathy Lauder can't forget the loving support she received from this community over the years, and she's now a key player in this year's pledge drive. Karen Foley was lifted up and deeply moved by the first impact rally she attended, and now encourages others at TJMC to support that cause as well. Tragedy in the homeless community motivated Elizabeth Breeden to act, and now our church has hosted Pacham for 15 years. Glenn Short was so inspired by his love of our community that he gave a financial gift to this church that will inspire the physical structure last another 77 years. And finally, Danny Gray says it was miscommunication that inspired him to take on a leadership role at TJMC. He thought I said sled ride, not pledge drive. Sorry, Danny. And then there's me. Parked in my living room with my cats staring at the fireplace. And if the fireplace doesn't work, I can try listening to music, driving a car, or walking the dogs. Russian composer Igor Stravinsky would stand on his head, as he believed this would rest his head and clear his brain. The French writer Balzac said coffee was a great power in his life, sending sparks shooting up to his brain. And to keep her thoughts flowing, Agatha Christie would eat apples in the bathtub, lining up the cores on the rim as she wrote her famous murder mysteries. Inspiration comes to us all in different ways. But whatever you need to do, wherever you need to be, I invite you over the next few weeks to take time to dream and imagine our future. Today's the start of the pledge drive, and soon enough we'll get around to talking about money and the budget and the finances. But first, let's have a chance to take our imaginations out of the box on the shelf of your brain where you keep it. Let your imagination zoom around, or bubble up, or drift into view. So You'll go gaze at a candle, or a chalice, or a fireplace, or a bonfire. Go hike in the mountains, or vacuum the rugs, or bake some bread, or rake some leaves, and dream. Just dream about our future. For yourself, for your family, for this church. Seek the kind of inspiration that has built and sustained this church and this church family for 77 years. Gaze into that fire.